Agenda Item 10, Wildlife Rehabilitation Structural Improvements and Updates. Now, it says on our agenda that this is a decision-making item, and there is also public input listed.
But we have one person signed up.
Okay, so we will have public input as well. So this is actually a...
I do not.
Briefing, hearing, and decision item.
Briefing, operative word, huh? Okay. Well, good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission, Director Anderson and Deputy Director Storr. My name is Patricia Thompson. I'm a fish and wildlife biologist, and I am the Wildlife Rehabilitation Coordinator for the state. And I want to thank you for allowing me the time to present the Wildlife Rehabilitation WAC revisions and the additions to these rules. Just as a little refresher, on June 7th, I was in here with a PowerPoint and presented an overview of the Wildlife Rehabilitation Program and an overview of the proposed WAC revisions and additions. Okay, so I want to say, with every cell of my being, I cannot stand to read a script, but I'm going to do it here just so we can get through this. So I know you'll bear with me. I just had to bear with myself when I do this. So, all right. You have in your packet the WAC revisions, and we can go through that individually. Currently, the WAC 232-12-275 is the complete rehabilitation rule, which bears the title Wildlife Rehabilitation Permits in entirety. All wildlife rehabilitation rules are contained in this one WAC, including the oiled bird rehabilitation requirements. The most current update of this rule was in 1996, and in my opinion, in a medical profession, that's a little bit, you know, a long time ago. And since then, there have been many changes to the profession of wildlife rehabilitation in our state. In 2007, as a refresher again, RCW 77.12.469 renewal of wildlife rehabilitation licenses was passed to give the WDFW the ability to more adequately regulate and monitor the wildlife rehabilitation activities in the state. The RCW mandated that the department must develop a process for renewing wildlife rehabilitation licenses. All wildlife rehabilitation licenses issued by the department prior to January 1st, 2006 must be renewed by January 1st, 2010. The department may adopt rules as necessary to implement this section. Well, that was a little bit of a short turnaround time, so we did come up with ways to reissue the wildlife rehabilitation permits by January 1st, 2010. So that was done. And that actually began the process of updating the wildlife rehabilitation guidelines and the regulations in Washington. So we got what was mandated done by issuing renewals of the rehab permits, and now we're into the process of actually doing the rules. The proposed new wildlife rehabilitation WACs provide information and guidelines for rehabilitators and answers to their many questions, both procedural and policy questions that quite frankly were making them very uncomfortable, and when I couldn't answer them, turn to a page and say, here it is, making me uncomfortable as well. Wildlife rehabilitators were a bit confused as what was expected of them, and the details in these new rules will aid wildlife rehabilitators in practicing the high quality standards that they would like to practice and what we would like to ensure. And now they know what is required of them. They're, you know, questions, that's uncomfortable. So the increased detail of these requirements within the rules and the addition of references to the RCW penalties for rule violations also promotes the enforceability of the wildlife rehabilitation regulations. I'm falling off the table. So upon suggestion, of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, language such as must comply with the necessary U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Migratory Bird Treaty Act permits was added to many of the sections because we did, in fact, send these rules to the permit biologist of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service so we could not run into problems with them. So the WFW also allies with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in migratory bird rehabilitation permitting. The addition of the Fish and Wildlife Service language adheres to the principle of this cooperation, and the rules actually might be slightly more strict than federal requirements, but not less so. Okay, wildlife rehabilitators, as you probably gathered last time, were involved in this entire process. In fact, most of the rules in this, in these new additions, are from the questions asked by the wildlife rehabilitators. They were involved in creating these rules from the beginning, which actually started a couple of years ago. First, by me addressing all of their licensing and procedure questions while we were in the process of doing that. And now with the proposed rules. So every wildlife rehabilitator in the state received a letter asking if they wanted to review the proposed rules. And this was at the very, very beginning. Those who responded, yes, we'd like to review the proposed rules, were sent the rules for them to read. I received reviews and comments from 10 of the wildlife rehabilitators, of the approximately 70 wildlife rehabilitators that I mailed the letters to. And they all had excellent suggestions, excellent comments, and we all worked together very well. I very much appreciate them. And most of those comments were incorporated into the rules. So all wildlife rehabilitators were then notified of the public comment period, and additional comments were solicited from them. As a matter of fact, they were personally invited to the commission meeting the last time. Okay, so summary of the WACs. WAC 232-12-275, currently titled Wildlife Rehabilitation Permits, is expanded to 15 separate WACs now. Expanding the topics and grouping and titling them will make them better, make for better understanding of the rules and ease of finding them whenever a specific answer is needed. And I'm going to fess up to the fact that I took this from the 2010 falconry rules, where they were split into different sections, and I'm also this falconry manager, the state falconry manager, and I tell you, being able to turn to Master Falconer right away is just really nice. I can give them the answer right away. All right. The only regulatory changes are in the definitions 232-12-275, which used to be the whole entire WAC, and it's now definitions. That's your page 3 of your notebook materials. 232-12-275 is amended to contain only those definitions, and 8 new definitions were added. 5 were amended or expanded, and the oiled wildlife definitions are really essentially the same. And we did work with the oiled wildlife people on those, so they were not left out. Examples of important additions to the definition are imprinting, because of the very unprofessional mistake of taming and imprinting was not emphasized enough. Sub-permittee, because sub-permittee seemed to be getting a bit out of hand. You know, we needed to keep track of them. And there was no recognition of the sub-permittees on a formal basis. Next one, 232-12-841. Which is way to page 11, because you can see how much was crossed out, because that's the old WAC, the single WAC. All right, wildlife rehabilitation permits, requirements, and restrictions. 841 outlines the detailed requirements and procedures for obtaining a WDFW wildlife rehabilitation permit and permit renewal requirements. And this was kind of the meat of that RCW, what they were asking for. So this was one of the really important parts. Many details were added to clarify the requirements. The language or 1,000 hours was added. That was one that was very confusing because we had a requirement of 6 months' experience. And everybody said, well, does that mean, 6 months altogether or 6 months, 8 hours for 5 years, 8 hours a week for 5 years? So we added 1,000 hours to make it easier. The letter of recommendation requirement was added to application requirements. Veterinarians are exempted from some of the requirements, and a 3-year expiration date is applied to wildlife rehabilitation permits. And just a little bit of information on that. I did have an ad hoc wildlife rehabilitator committee advising me on this, and they are actually the ones that came up with the 3-year renewal period. I went through all the states to see what their renewal periods was. They kind of averaged that, and 3 years is kind of what they liked. So that's what they got. Okay. Also added to this section, very importantly, is a large carnivore endorsement because we had people saying, oh, gee, I'd really like to do cougars. So we thought, well, it'd probably be a good idea that they had some training to do cougars or bear, and we do have those large carnivores outlined in the WAC. We expanded the rules for raptor endorsement, and we added the requested raptor-only rehabilitation permit and the formal oiled wildlife rehabilitation endorsement. There's only very few people that are endorsed for oiled wildlife. That does take a whole new, it's a whole new ballgame set of rules. These endorsements deal with the fact that rehabilitating particular species or types of animals obviously require additional skill and experience. Most rehabbers actually only get the basic wildlife rehabilitation permit. Many of them get the raptor endorsement, and I do have a few queued up to start training for the large carnivore endorsement. And also there's a time limit added to having to retake the test. A facility inspection was added, and the out-of-state permit rules were constructed similar to what was in the falconry rules. Okay, on to 843, which is on page 14. It's this long, 3 lines. Clearly defines responsibilities of the primary permittee over the sub-permittee and the requirements for listing that sub-permittee on the permit so we can keep track of them. It also provides for the requirements for updating the department with changed information. Okay, that was fast. 845 on page 15. We're to that. Permit revocation, modification, or suspension. This outlines the procedure for revoking a permit, and in the past, there was no clear definition when a wildlife rehabilitation permit should be revoked, which made invalidating a permit difficult in situations when it was necessary to do so, and they have come up a couple of times. There are also situations where the violation is not egregious enough to warrant the permanent removal of that wildlife rehabilitator, such as a reporting requirement or, a small mistake that they all make but normally panic about when they find it out. The wording was added to allow the permittee to correct the problem, return to compliance, and maintain their permit. So it wouldn't be as scary as they thought it was. Okay, 847, page 16. Facility requirements and inspections, including on and off-site care. Everybody there? 847 is a greatly expanded facility inspection. This section provides for more detail for the facility requirements and inspections to address the many issues and questions and circumstances of the facility. Items that were expanded and clarified were in-home facility requirements. And this was important because we did have a few in-home rehabilitators with, I think I mentioned this last time. They, would watch TV with raccoons and stuff. And so we had to put in a requirement there. There has to be, if you're an in-home wildlife rehabilitator, there must be a dedicated room where there's no TV, no computer, no eating, no nothing. It's just for wildlife rehabilitation. The very important sub-permittee restrictions were added and requirements that clearly defined those restrictions for the sub-permittees, which includes the species of animals they can take home as a sub-permittee, which does not include a cougar. No, you can't keep that in your backyard. So now we have a way to say that. Also in this section are new directions for the facilities located on rented property. On to 849, releasing wildlife. That's on page 17 if you were following along. That outlines the release requirements previously only implied but practiced and were not clearly defined. This created a lot of uncertainty with the wildlife rehabilitators, and it also created a lot of phone calls to me, you know, can I release it here? Can I release them together? Created a lot of unease. Also, it was difficult to enforce the requirements of release. These rules are such as rehabilitators are given latitude to release an animal not at the absolute exact spot it was retrieved. Sometimes they don't even know that, but a safer spot. You know, like say it's it was retrieved in a very urban area and it would be unsafe for the animal and unsafe for people to release it at that exact spot. But it's okay within its normal individual range to release that animal. Unrelated conspecifics, those animals that are the same species may be released together even if they are unrelated. But it requires that the rehabber obtain department approval to release an animal out of its normal individual range. Is everybody keeping up with this? I hope I'm not losing you. Okay, and requirements for large carnivores, cervids, and coyotes. The release criteria for those animals became very, very important. Okay, 851 on page 18, a short one, veterinary care establishes that veterinarians do not need a wildlife rehabilitation permit. They were very confused about this, but they may house, any veterinarian can take in wildlife for a couple of days for stabilization. But after that, if they do not have a wildlife rehab permit, they must turn it over to a rehabber. Okay, 853, records retention and reporting requirements, page 19. 853 establishes annual reporting requirements, which we did have, adding the language primary permittee, which is the person that applies for and gets the permit, to distinguish between the primary permittee and sub-permittee responsibilities. And I got many requests for retention of records electronically, and we put that in here to say, yes, that's okay to retain the records electronically. Because actually, when I asked that question, sometimes people didn't know either, so we put that in here. Very importantly, reportable diseases were updated in this section. Since it was updated last in 1996, many of the reportable diseases that people get, the zoonotics, were not in the reportable disease section. So that was in there too. Okay, 855 on page 20, falconers assisting with raptor rehabilitation. 855 supports the new 2010 falconry WAC 232-30-560, falconers assisting in wildlife rehabilitation. I figured that it couldn't really be in the falconry WACs and not in the rehab WACs, so we put that in there to match that, and that generally follows the wording of the falconry WAC. Ours is a little has more detail, some of the requirements agreeing with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for falconers. And upon the suggestion of a couple of our wildlife rehabilitators in that community, only master falconers now and those with Fish and Wildlife Service eagle handling permission may assist in rehabilitating eagles. It was felt that only the master falconers could really handle the eagles, so we decided to add that in there. 857, page 21. Transfer, import, and export of wildlife. This is for the benefit of our border rehabbers with Idaho, Oregon, and Canada. But Idaho and Oregon mostly. That addresses the issue of wildlife crossing state lines for rehab, which many rehabbers had questions about. These are entirely new rules based on the directions from our veterinarian, Dr. Kristen Mansfield. She is the one that said, okay, these animals can go across, these animals cannot go across. 859, page 21, possession of dead wildlife and wildlife parts. That contains the provisions relating to keeping dead wildlife and wildlife parts. Most provisions are merely transported over from the original WAC. However, changes were made for the possession of feathers to comply with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service migratory birds. 861. Page 22, disposition of non-releasable and habituated, imprinted, and tamed wildlife. 861 strengthens the department's position on prohibiting the taming and habituating of wildlife and the prohibition of the release of tamed, habituated, and imprinted animals. This was primarily for dangerous wildlife, carnivores, predators, anything that might cause injury or harm to people. This section reinforces the prohibition on habituation and the requirement to euthanize certain species, such as deer and the carnivores that have become habituated. The section still allows rehabilitators to retain non-releasable wildlife for orphan imprinting, if not tamed, and to house any non-releasable wildlife for education. So imprinted, habituated wildlife may be retained for education. Non-imprinted and non-tamed wildlife may be retained to act as surrogates for the other wildlife. Okay, almost there. 863, euthanizing protected, threatened, or endangered wildlife and migratory birds. That's page 23 in yours. This expands the provisions relating to the euthanizing, threatened, or endangered wildlife and migratory birds in order to replicate the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service language. This section details when euthanizing, threatened, or endangered wildlife may be done without department permission. Imagine a threatened or endangered animal coming in with a squashed, basically, but they're still alive, you know, broken leg, broken wing, missing limbs. Those rehabilitators and veterinarians need to be able to make the decision to euthanize immediately for humane reasons. So that's what that's for. 865, disposing of wildlife remains. Page 23, wildlife rehabilitators have a lot of dead animals. I mean, imagine this. Lots of dead animals. 50% of what they intake is either euthanized, are dead on arrival, or die in under care. So this contains provisions that provide the requirements for disposing of wildlife in a safe way for humans and for other species. 867, prohibition on commercial uses, page 24, expands in much greater detail the permitted versus prohibited money exchanging activities. Wildlife rehabilitators, as you know, depend solely on donations and grants and have very limited operating funds, almost always using their own money. Really, it's a labor of love. They may not under any circumstances charge fees or sell products related to wildlife rehabilitation animals. So what we wanted to do with this section is tell them when it's okay to charge, when it's okay to ask for donations. So, such as if they take pictures of the wildlife in their care, make a calendar, produce a calendar, they may put that calendar out at their donations table, suggest a donation, and the person may take that calendar. They may not require a donation, and they may not require a certain amount, but they may do it. Okay, 869, oil bird rehabilitation facility requirements is page 24. Oh, I think you're lucky because I'm just going to say Oil birds' requirements did not change. They remain basically the same. They're extremely detailed because the facilities require quite a bit of equipment, quite a bit of standards. So those remain the same. And then the last one, 871, reporting receipt, death, carcass retention, and release of oiled birds. And so that did not change either.
Anyone have any questions?
Any questions to any of that, if you can really remember what I said.
I remember the presentation. Thank you. Any questions? Patricia? Looks like you did a good job answering.
I hope so.
Everything?
Thank you.
We do have someone who signed up for public input. Just one person? Okay, so we'll go into public input.
Okay.
And again, to review the rules, 3 minutes for each person. When you hear the beeping noise, your time's up, and we'd like you to conclude. Martha Jordan, you want to come forward?
I'll just be real brief. I do support and applaud the efforts of Tricia Thompson and the others who have put this together. It is so badly needed by this agency. And being on the Enforcement Advisory Committee, I realize that the agency is also undergoing a revision of its RCWs to be able to better use them, consolidate them, put them into tables, and like you've done here with your WACs, and I hear it continuing today. And I really think this is a really valuable undertaking, not only for within the agency, but for those of us who are affected by this. But in particular, I want to say I really support these rules and regulations. I've given my comments to Tricia addressing things like must euthanize if we have a species, and for me it's been swans all these years. A rehabber gets one in, amputates a wing. Well, it doesn't really have to be euthanized if we can use it in a breeding program. So we're making sure that we get that provision, and all's good. But I ask you to support this, and I really want to say thank you to the agency for undertaking this badly needed revision of the wildlife rehab.
Great. Thank you. All right. Any further comments from the commission? If not, I think we're ready for a motion. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you. And please bear with me as I go through this. I move to adopt the amendments to WAC 232.12.275 and new sections 232.12.841, 232.12.843, 232.12.845, 232.12.847, 232.12.849, 232.12.851, 232.12.853, 232.12.855, 232.12.857, 232.12.859, 232.12.861, 232.12.863, 232.12.865, 232.12.867, 232.12.869, and 232.12.871 as proposed by the department. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent job. Would anyone like to second the motion?
I'll second that.
The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Carpenter, as read by Commissioner Smith. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion carries. Great job.